Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, October 21st, 2012. This is episode 920. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow and send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today free for 30 days free. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. No startup cost, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the iPhone 5 or the iPad mini at gazelle.com.
Hey,
how are you today,
Leo Laporte?
Tech Guy. Time to talk computers,
the internet, cell phones, and camcorders.
MP3 players and home theater. Hey, can I ask you a favor, Kyle? Oh, you got it. Thank you. It's getting a little mixed down the line. I don't like hearing myself. I like hearing you, and this is your chance to do it. 8888-ASK-LEO. You got a phone, and you got the number. And you got a computer, then you got problems. And you can call me, and I'll do my best. Computer, but also, you know, cell phones. We talk a lot about cell phones these days. Speaking of which, where'd my cell phone go? Oh, my goodness. Here it is. Yeah. I have the giant one, you know. I have the big one now, the Galaxy Note 2. We were talking yesterday. I think I was perhaps a little controversial, perhaps a little overdramatic yesterday when I mentioned that... having now tried the iPhone 5 for 3 weeks, I no longer can recommend it. And I'd love to, you know, I got an interesting number of tweets from a surprising number of people who agreed with me. I didn't expect that. Who said, yeah, you know, I'm bringing mine back. It all happened to me. I was traveling with my friend Lisa we went to Denver to see Madonna, which was amazing. I know it's not done to admit that as a guy, you actually like Madonna, but I do. And that was an amazing show. And I'll talk a little bit about the technology. Because they're really, concert technology has taken great leaps and bounds with LED lighting, computer-generated graphics, and amazing projection capabilities now. Even a tour, which, you know, I mean, if you go to see something like a permanent place like Cirque du Soleil in Las Vegas, if you go see Love, for instance, in Las Vegas, you will see amazing state-of-the-art technology with moving stages, incredible lighting, just incredible stuff. But even on a tour where she's going to a different city every few days, they are able to do some amazing things on these big budget tours. So we'll talk about that. But let's get back to the iPhone. So my friend Lisa, who has an iPhone 5, and I had an iPhone 5, I was smart. I brought my iPhone 5, but I also brought my Galaxy Note 2 because I had some trepidation about relying only on the iPhone 5 after this Maps debacle. She only had the iPhone 5 and found herself increasingly frustrated. For instance, we were trying to find a restaurant in Denver, and she looked. She opened Zagat, the Zagat guide. Great guide. Zagat says, sorry, we're out of business. Done. No reviews. Bye. Go away. No Zagat for you. And I said, yeah, Google bought them. The app is dead, and you have to use Google Maps. Oh, gee, I'm sorry you don't have Google Maps, do you? You could do it in the browser, but, you know, that's far from convenient, and you miss a few other things. And so I pulled out my Galaxy Note 2 with a ginormous screen, and I have not only Google Maps, I've got Street View, I've got Zagat guides, I've got all the Yelp reviews, I've got everything. So, and we were using it for turn-by-turn directions. And it, and the battery life on her phone, she by 4 p.m., you know, she continued to use it to take pictures. Great camera. It's best camera on the market, I think. So she was taking great pictures. In fact, when I was taking pictures at the concert and later at the Denver Museum of Art, or the DAM, as they call it, Denver Art Museum, I didn't pull out the Galaxy. I pulled out the iPhone because it's a great camera, really great camera, and was using that to take pictures. But her phone was dead by 4 or 5 o'clock. Very frustrating to her. So she said, I'm taking it back. I'm taking it back. She says, I think you've convinced me. I'm going to get a Galaxy S3. She likes LTE, so she's probably going to get it on Verizon. I'm using the Galaxy Note 2, the European unlocked version, which means I'm not getting LTE. But I have to say the Android experience, particularly with the new Jelly Bean operating system, really is spectacular. And I have to, I hate to say it because I'm an iPhone fan. I bought an iPhone when they came out in day one. I was a major fan, but I can no longer recommend the iPhone unequivocally. You should certainly try it. If you like a tiny phone, go for it. It's funny, after you use a giant phone like this 5.5-inch Galaxy Note 2 for a little while, and you look at the iPhone, you go, "Ooh, that's tiny. It's really small." You know what? Apple would be smart. They have got an event coming up Tuesday, the 23rd, day after tomorrow. Apple's going to do another event. They sent out invitations. And this one's a little smaller event, you know, in one of the Apple auditoriums. And we don't, you know, of course, Apple does not say ahead of time. And the invitation really has no clue. It just says, yeah, we got some more stuff here for you. So it's unknown what they're going to announce, except it's completely known, except we know exactly what the leaks have it. And in this case, I think we are pretty sure. When I say we, I'm referring to the tech press as a collective whole. I don't have any sources at Apple, and certainly nobody has told me anything. But I do have to think, when you see the Wall Street Journal, All Things D, both of whom clearly have direct connections into Apple, because, you know, Walt Marsberg is beloved by Apple. When you see Jim Dalrymple of The Loop, another beloved by Apple editor, 9to5 Mac, Apple Insider, and MacRumors.com all agree on something. And then you got to think, well, I guess maybe it's true. I mean, it could be an echo chamber. But the last month, the iPhone 5 announcement, they nailed it. There was nothing we did not know about the iPhone 5, and the major ones didn't get anything wrong. So this is what the consensus is. There will be a 7.85-inch small iPad. Wouldn't it be cool if they put phone service into that? Then you'd have something to compete with the Galaxy Note. You'd have a giant phone on the iOS side. They're not going to do it. It will be 3G. It will be 1024 by 768. That's the screen resolution. Same as the iPad 2. In fact, in many ways, it'll be very similar to an iPad 2. Thinner, lighter, smaller. But the capabilities of an iPad 2. What we don't know is the price, although the consensus from the pundits, and this just broke yesterday, is that the base model will be $329. Now, remember, the base model that they're competing against, the tablet they're competing against is the Galaxy Nexus, is the Nexus 7 from Google, the Google Nexus 7. That's $200. The Kindle Fire HD, that's $200. Those are the base. You can pay more for both. You can add memory and stuff. And you can pay, and of course, Apple doesn't expect you to buy the $329 model. That'll be an 8 gigabyte, Wi-Fi only. They know you're going to say, oh, well, that's a nice, but if I put $50 more, you know. So you're going to spend more like $400. And the same thing with the, but I'm going to start with what you'll see in the ads, starting at $329, starting at $200. That's what you see in the ads. So is an iPad worth a $129 premium? I think it is over the Kindle Fire HD. They've really dumbed that down. It's a very simple device intended pretty much only for people who are Amazon fanatics. You know, and it doesn't sell really overseas because Amazon doesn't have a big presence overseas. It's a U.S. market Amazon portal. So let's not compare it to the Fire. Let's compare it to the Nexus 7. which is a very nice tablet for $200. You might want those the slightly bigger size, the 16 gigabyte for $250. It's more than $100 less. Is it worth a lot less? One thing somebody said in the chat room yesterday, we have a great chat room, is I got to see the camera. If the camera on the 7.85-inch iPad is a good camera, is an 8-megapixel camera, then that might make a nice little pocket camera / iPad / book reading device. We're also seeing the rumors that this is intended for schools. This is the education iPad, and that they're going to very much push the textbooks on this thing, which means, by the way, you want to get more memory because these textbooks are gigantic. But that's not all. Apple has more to talk about on Tuesday, and I'll talk about that when we come back. We'll also go to the phones. 888-ASK-LEO. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Website is techguylabs.com. If you'd like to visit the website, there's a couple of reasons you might want to do that. First of all the show notes are there from 920 episodes. That's a few. 920 episodes. What happens is we've got James DeRuvo, who is working hard as I speak right now. He's writing down what I say, and he'll get that right into the show notes within a few minutes. So if you hear me recommend a website or you know, give you an answer and you go, what did he say? What was that? You hear one of our great sponsors, you go, wow, who was that? That'll be there at techguylabs.com almost right away. And then Josh Windisch, who's working here out of our office, then later in the week, he'll edit out the podcast from the show and then puts video up on YouTube and then links the questions and answers to the video on YouTube. So you can actually then, a couple of days later, as soon as tomorrow, he's pretty quick, go back to the website, see the question or listen to it, watch the question and answer, see my answer. Josh fills that out so it's in more detail. And then this is the most important part. You can comment on it. And I really wish you'd do that. If you're listening, I know people, it's okay. You can admit it. You listen to the radio to catch me out, to say, Leo's wrong. Sometimes I know you're even yelling at it. Leo, wait a minute. There's something better out there. How could you recommend that when there's this? Or how could you say you don't like the iPhone 5? It's so much better than anything. So that's your chance to yell at the radio, but do it on the comments so everybody can see them and sharing them. And if you go there and read comments, you can vote them up and down. And my hope is over time, the website will really become a great source of information, answers to questions. It's all free. There's no subscription. Everything there is free. The podcasts are free. It's all available. You know, it's thanks to our sponsors. They pay the freight. They pay the bill, and that way we can do everything for you for free. You don't have to pay a subscription. So please take advantage of that. Use it. You'll also find a link to the chat room, which is a great place to go to participate in the conversation. Oh my gosh! Usually around 1,000 people in there. It's so much fun, and the chat room is so helpful to me during the show. I mean, I like it. It's fun. It's a social hour, so it's that mostly. But it's also very useful to me because the chat room knows all. And if there's something I don't remember or don't know, the chat room will tell me. So a good place to go if you're one of those experts who yells. You can yell in the chat room. 888-ASK-LEO. The website is techguylabs.com. Our first call of the day is George in Houston, Texas. Hi, George. Leo Laporte. Hi.
How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Really well. I bought a new computer about a week ago. It's an HP system running on Windows 7 Home Premium.
Now, you weren't tempted to wait because, you know, in a week, this Friday, Windows 8 comes out.
Yes.
You weren't tempted to wait for that.
No, I didn't want 8 because I heard you say some bad things about it, and I thought I was going to close out deal on Windows 7, which I did.
And, by the way, you get an inexpensive or free upgrade to Windows 8 should you choose it.
Yes, I don't think I'd take advantage of that.
Yeah, I'm impressed with Windows 8 in the sense that it really did some innovative thinking about user interface and so forth, but I just don't think it's going to be... I think people are going to feel uncomfortable with it. I don't think it's going to wow people. I think Windows 7 is the best version of Windows ever made.
Yes. By the way, you're kind of chopping up a little bit. You might want to tell them about that. But I wanted to ask you, is there a way of making Windows 7 look like XP Classic Mode, I think they call it?
Classic Mode, yeah. I remember Vista, you could do Classic Mode. I'm pretty sure you still have that capability. If you can't do it automatically, you could certainly do it, you know, by hand, going into Appearance and changing the appearances. It's Uncle Bick, is there still a setting that says Classic?
It's a 64-bit system, by the way.
That's good, yeah. Yeah, everybody in the chat room is saying, yeah. How do you get into the Classic Mode of Windows 7? Right-click Desktop, Personalize, and apparently there's still a Classic Mode. I remember they did that in Vista. For people who liked... Now, it won't give you the Fisher-Price XP interface. It'll give you the more gray, simple one, which is what I prefer, frankly.
Okay, yeah. I'll do that. I didn't know. I kind of looked around. Maybe I missed it, but I will...
They assure me that it is. So, although I think Windows 7, and I particularly like Aero, I think the way Windows 7 is... I did go in Vista. I really didn't like Vista. I did go to Classic Mode in Vista and XP. Because I like that more traditional NT or Windows 2000 look. But in Windows 7, I thought it was very tasteful. You know, it's just all taste. It's a matter of taste. And I liked it. I actually like Windows 7 and the way it looks. But that's up to you. Now, the things like the folder, you know, / libraries, all those things, those new things, you're stuck with those. But you'll get used to that, and I think it's very powerful. The thing to remember with libraries, if you're moving from XP to Windows 7 or Windows 8, I guess, is that they aren't really folders. They look like folders, but they're really saved searches in a way. So they combine files from a variety of folders. For instance, your picture library may have pictures from a variety of folders all over your hard drive made into a virtual folder, which is great. So for me, anyway, it's helpful to think of it as a saved search. And Green Mike is telling me that the StarDock... is, of course, they've been around for ages, refining the Windows UI, customizing it, making it fancy if you want. And apparently StarDock is already doing a Windows 7 version for Windows 8. It's called Start 8. I haven't played with it yet, but I will. My RT tablet is coming on Friday. I'll certainly have a review for you on next week's show. And as soon as I can get a Windows 8 machine in here, I will. I've been running Windows 8 on... virtual machines on the Macintosh. I don't mind it. I like it. I think that what's going to happen, though, and user interface experts have said this, is that people are going to be a little baffled. They did some user testing in a company that's very famous for their user interface methodology called Nielsen Jacob, and they brought some normal users in. And they sat in front of Windows 8 and they watched carefully and they said, you know, it's going to be a little mysterious because there are mysterious commands that are sometimes hard to get to, hovering the mouse, getting the mouse in the lower left or lower right corner, to get those charms up. You have to move the mouse to the right spot in the corner. If you know the keystroke command, it's easy to get that to pop up. If you know exactly where to move the mouse, it's easy to get it to pop up. But they said people don't, right? They don't take the time to... read documentation. And it's going to take them a while to get used to these new, frankly, not very discoverable commands in Windows 8. If you go to Windows 8, the people who are happiest with Windows 8, and I include myself in this, took the time to learn the keystrokes and so forth, or get a Windows 8 computer which will have some special keys on it, a charms key, for instance, that'll make it a little easier to open those charms, which you're also going to struggle with. And, you know, anybody moving to a Mac from Windows or vice versa struggles with this as well, as where things are, because they've, you know, you're used to going to the control panels and finding everything there, and things have moved around. Some of the stuff is buried deeper. Turning off the machine is... You gotta dig around. So take a little while to get used to. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Man, I just turned my thermostat down at the house. I forgot when I left not to. Yeah, on my phone I have my thermostat. I love this. So there's a new. It's actually not new, but the new model just came out. A thermostat called the Nest, designed by Tony Fadell. Tony is the guy who designed, I think, the original iPod. He used to be at Apple for a long time. Left Apple, probably left Apple with millions of bucks in his pocket. And as often happens, these guys, then they follow a dream. And his dream, apparently, was to design a better home thermostat. Hey, everybody's got their dreams. So he has this thermostat has Wi-Fi. It's called the Nest. It has Wi-Fi built into it. So and it's fairly – now, I am not a handyman. I am not good at this. But it's fairly easy. In fact, the new Nest that just came out, they really make it simple to install. They give you little stickers to put on the wires as you're moving the old thermostat. Almost all – it apparently works with almost all home thermostats now. Had no trouble, you know, matching the wires up, putting them in. They give you a base plate and everything. It's very easy. If you can use a screwdriver, you probably can install this thing. And most thermostats are low voltage. Now, they do warn you, and you should probably check – you read the instructions before you do it. If you have a high voltage thermostat, you're obviously going to want to be more careful, shut the power off and everything. But I had no difficulty doing it. And now – so this – first of all, it's beautiful, right? It glows. When you walk by, it wakes up and says hello. And the first thing you do when you install this thermostat is you connect it to your home Wi-Fi network. You sign it into your network. Now there's some good reasons for that. First of all, the thermostat knows the weather. You tell it where you are, what the zip code is. And so that's important if you think about it. A thermostat knows, hey, if it's 90 degrees outside, I'm not going to turn my heat on. So the thermostat knows what the weather is, and it also watches your behavior. And instead of manually making schedules, which I had done, it pays attention. It even has a motion sensor, so it knows if there's anybody in the house moving around, and so it's not going to, you know, freeze the house when there's people in there in the winter. Or it works with air conditioning too. I don't have air conditioning, but now it's not a cheap thing, and it's not going to probably save you money, at least in the first few years. $250. But the theory is over time you will save money on your heating bills because it does things no thermostat does. For instance, if you have air conditioning, normally a thermostat, when it turns off the air conditioning, turns off the fan. They go hand in hand. The Nest will run the fan for an extra period of time to get the additional cooling out of the coils before it shuts down. It knows things like that. It's like a smart thermostat. It's very cool. But the thing I love, and which I just did, is they have iPhone and Android apps. And you can actually go on your phone and set the temperature in your house. So I forgot to turn the thermostat off. And it's paying attention to this. Eventually, you know, it will learn, oh, yeah, after, 11 in the morning, Leo's not home, we can turn the thermostat down. It's a gadget. It's gimmicky. But I like it. It's cool. I don't know if it's going to save me money. Given that it costs so much, it'd have to save an awful lot to pay for itself. Timothy in North Carolina, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Timothy.
Hey, how you doing today?
I am well. How are you?
Doing great. I had a question.
Yes, sir.
About hosting a download on my website. I did a Kickstarter, and it got successfully funded, so now I need to do my fulfillment.
You're kidding. Congratulations. What's your Kickstarter project so I can look at it?
It's a comic book. It's a little mini comic I did. It's called BDR.
BD as in Big Dog's Rule?
It is as in Big Dog's Rule, but...
But that's not what it's about. That's just... I see it. Timothy O'Brien, BDR by Kickstarter. So now let me explain to people who haven't heard of Kickstarter. The idea of this is, I think, fantastic. The idea of Kickstarter is... You can ask basically for investors. Ask for people to back what you're up to. And they can invest in you. Now, it's not investors in the sense that they get stock. They don't own your comic book. They're just supporting you. They say, hey, this is a good idea. We'd like to give Timothy some money. And then you offer them for, varieties of different pledge amounts. Either, in your case, you gave them a digital copy for $2. If they gave $6, you'd get a mini comic. $15, they'd get the mini comic, a print, you know, like that. And you didn't ask for a whole lot. You just asked for $200. You got $341. Still got 10 days to go. So maybe people will go kick in more. You know, there are some Kickstarter projects that have raised millions. The Pebble Watch, I can't remember how much they raised, but it was a ton of money. I'm trying to remember what the biggest one was. Let's see. The Pebble Watch raised $10.2 million. They asked for $100,000. Now, there's some problems in general with this. I think a lot of people, and Kickstarter has been at pains to explain this recently, think that this is a store. It's not. When people gave money to Pebble, there was no watch. They were giving money funding the research and development of a watch. And frankly, what you got might be terrible. So you're taking a big chance. And I think sometimes people don't think that when they visit Kickstarter. Now, you
right.
you did the right thing, Timothy. You made a movie. You did the right job. And I hope maybe more people will go to support you on this. That's so cool. So
right.
Have you done a comic before?
Yes, I have. This is my first solo one, but I've done one with my brother, and I've done several web comics for different people and stuff like that.
It is about dogs, though. That's interesting. And cats and roosters.
There's my three main stars. And the one thing about this one is the comic book's already done, so this isn't like investing in a product that's a concept. This is really just to see how many I need to print and to cover my printing costs.
Well, exactly. And so that's one of the advantages of this. Inventing a product or bringing a product to market, of course, you've got to have the invention, you've got to have the development, but often it's the production that costs a lot of money. And so knowing that, hey, I can guarantee that this I will sell $300 worth, that pays for your print run.
Right. And so the only thing, I just wanted to know if you had I wanted to know the smartest way I can offer the digital download. I can do it through my own website, or if there was a third-party service that you knew that could take care of this.
Yeah, because now how big is the comic book? How many megabytes is it?
It's not that big. It's off the top of my head, I would say it's at the most 100 megabytes.
Okay. So that is big if you have thousands downloading it. Most websites have limits on the amount of bandwidth you can use every month.
Right.
And so 100 megabytes times, well, you know, you have 25 backers. That's not too bad. That's 2,500 megabytes, 2.5 gigabytes. But even that would exceed the limits on some websites per month. And what happens is bandwidth gets very expensive after that fact. So I think you're going to – now, here's one solution. Squarespace, who is a sponsor, I should mention, squarespace.com, does have a plan that offers unlimited bandwidth for, I think it's $16 a month if you buy an annual plan, $20 if you buy it month to month. But there is a limit that you should be aware of, and this is why I asked how big the comic is. Even though it has unlimited bandwidth, you can't put a file bigger than 20 megabytes on there. So the solution to that would, by the way, be just divide the comic book up into, chunks, 5 chunks or 4 chunks like that. And then you could get around that. You could say part one, part two, part three, part four. So for $20 for the first month, you could have a million people could download it. As long as the individual files are less than 20 megabytes, you're good. So that's one good start. Another one to look at would be Libsyn, where you don't pay for the bandwidth, just the storage. Libsyn.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
MEGA, upload to me today. Send me a file. Mega upload.
Oh, yeah. See, Kyle Benham, my musical director, is answering Timothy's question. Mega upload. That's why, this is why people were upset about the U.S. government's prosecution of Kim.com and Mega Upload for being a pirate storage site. And perhaps, in fact, certainly there was piracy going on. Whether Kim.com, the owner of Mega Upload, knew anything about it or not is a question. A question the courts will, I'm sure, decide. But, unfortunately, when the government seized those Mega Upload servers, they seized a lot of stuff like Timothy's comics. Private files, files that had been shared that where people were legitimate. Kim.com apparently has created a new Mega Upload. I don't know anything about it. But that's certainly the kind of solution that would be great for somebody like Timothy. Timothy, just to recap, has a comic book he's designed. He wants to make digital downloads available as well as printed downloads. It's about 100 megabytes per comic. And so you could go to a hosting company and check carefully what the bandwidth limits are at the hosting company. Often there's two numbers you want to pay attention to. Peak bandwidth that you use. as well as the amount of data per month that people can download. Because what your concern is, and where you can get in trouble, is if the comic becomes surprisingly popular and you've got 1,000 people an hour trying to download it, your peak upload, your peak download bandwidth could also go through the roof. And there are always these hidden charges. A content distribution system, or CDN, I guess that's Content Distribution Network, CDN, is of course what iTunes, Amazon, and others use for massive amounts of downloads. iTunes or Google recently, we talked about this last week, the Felix Baumgartner, who jumped out of the weather balloon at 24 miles above the Earth, the Stratus Project. They streamed that on YouTube. 8 million people watched it, a new record for simultaneous views of a stream. 8 million. To give you an idea, the previous record also set by YouTube was 500,000 during the Olympics. 500,000. So a huge amount. And the way Google handled this, of course, Google has a lot of bandwidth. They didn't feel like they had enough bandwidth to handle 8 million simultaneous views. So they went to a content distribution network, in this case Akamai, and said, help us. You know, you've got to provide it. Now, what CDNs do is they provide servers, many, 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 many servers. They distribute the content over a bunch of servers. And when you go to Akamai, and you may be going through iTunes to do it, iTunes uses it as well, you won't know that you're on an Akamai server, but it will geolocate you and send you to the server that's closest to you. Same thing if you download our podcasts, for instance. We're on a network called CacheFly, another great CDN. In fact, one I highly recommend. CacheFly has servers all over the world. And so if you try to download my podcasts from the Twit network in Germany, you'll go to a CDN that's near Germany, a server near Germany. If you try to do it from Bloomington, you'll go to one near Bloomington. If you try to do it from Tampa, you'll go to one near Tampa. And that means you get faster response. CDNs typically cost around 10 to 15 cents a gigabyte. Now, Timothy said his comic is 100 megabytes, so that means if it's 100 megabytes, a gigabyte is 1,000, so that means each gigabyte is 10 comic books. If it costs a dime to download 10 comic books, his cost for bandwidth is a penny a comic book. He's charging, I'm sure, you know, a couple of bucks. So there's plenty of profit left over after the bandwidth. The nice thing about a CDN is you get really good response times, really fast download times. It makes your customers happy. That's why we use CacheFly, because when you want to download something from CacheFly, you know, our podcasts, they come really fast. Another one I would recommend is CacheFly. I think we pay, I think it's 10 cents a gigabyte, I think is the, but that may be because we use a terabyte a day. It may cost more if you're not using quite that much bandwidth. But that would certainly be something worth looking into. And CacheFly is a very, I think, user-friendly interface and so forth for managing all of that. Beatmaster has a good suggestion. You know, there are comic book sites. Now, they probably take a fairly big chunk. This kind of, I would guess, like iTunes is for music, a site like Comixology is for comics, where you put your comic on there. The nice thing about that is you get to a larger audience. But I imagine they take a chunk. iTunes takes 30%. I would guess that the Comixology takes something similar. But Timothy, congratulations. It's great. You had a successful Kickstarter. And now you're on your way. And that's what I love about Kickstarter, is the idea that somebody can really be an entrepreneur, create their own business, do their own thing, and ask people, you know, for support. And, you know, it's also a great way to do market research. If a lot of people say, hey, this is a great idea, you're going to go ahead and do it. But you should be aware of the negatives. In fact, there was a fairly recent Kickstarter fail. A game that Kickstarter was, they raised some money on Kickstarter to develop the game, and it turned out not to be enough, and they've closed their doors. What was the name of the game? Was it Ghost or something like that? When that happens, you don't get your money back on Kickstarter. So it's important to remember, Kickstarter is not an investment. It's not a purchase. It's a donation. And so let the buyer beware. There's no guarantee that you'll get your money back. The guy who created this game, by the way, did say he would, out of his own, he spent all the money. They raised, I think, $25,000. He said he would, out of his own pocket, reimburse anybody who wanted to be. But he has no legal liability, no legal requirement to do so. That's just out of the goodness of his own heart. What's it called? Haunts. That's it. Haunts, not ghost. They decided, you know, they just couldn't make the game happen. $28,000 they raised from 1,200 people. Those people are out their money. They're not going to get the game. You know, and there was no guarantee that it was going to be a good game anyway. Could have been they got the game and it was horrible. Could be I'll get that Pebble watch, which I invested in or contributed to, and it's terrible. No guarantee. Joe in Knoxville, hang on just a second. We're talking to you next. He says he got an old camera from his son, a World War II soldier's camera. And this is the story that he called last week, and I ran out of time. So, Joe, I'm so glad you called back because you found the family, and I want to hear this story. It's on YouTube, too, I guess. So, Joe, I'm so glad you called back because I really wanted to hear this story. We ran out of time last week. Tell me what happened.
Okay. Good day, Leo. Yeah, Christmas of last year, I collect old cameras, and my sons gave me an old movie camera for Christmas. And what really made it interesting, when you look on the bottom of the camera, and this is an old 16-millimeter movie camera, written on the bottom of the camera was Lieutenant F.C. Brevelier.
Wow.
112th Infantry, 28th Division, and 0-407-500. And doing some tracking with a friend of
mine. Oh, no. Joe, okay, you did the setup. I'm not doing it to you again. We're going to come back. Hang on. I apologize. News at the top of the hour, and then we'll find out how Joe found the family right after this. Hey, let me tell you a little bit about ShareFile while we're in the break, because I want to... these guys are supporting the podcast, and I really appreciate the help that they're giving us to make this podcast possible. I told you everything's free, and it's supported by our advertisers. They're great people. And this one is one that I use every single week. It's called ShareFile. Now, if you're in business, there are always files you need to share, designs, documents. If you're a photographer, you know, you're a wedding photographer, you got to share the pictures with the bride, things like that. Now, you could attach them in an email, but I can guarantee you a couple of problems. First of all, if they're big files, bounce backs are a real problem. There's still email inboxes that cap out at 10 megabytes. That's less than one image. It's not going to work. Furthermore, it's not private. If you're a physician and you're sending medical information to a patient, you can't just email it. HIPAA compliance, you know, you got to be private. You got to protect their privacy. So that's why I recommend ShareFile. ShareFile is HIPAA compliance, compliant with all privacy regulations, all government privacy regulations. It's not email, although you can. If you use Outlook, there's a plugin that makes it look just like email. But it's not. It is a secure service that gives you a lot of additional features. For instance, password protection. You can limit access. Let me show you how I use ShareFile. I'm going to log into my ShareFile account. First of all, what's nice about ShareFile is it's branded. See, it's got my Twit logo. It's customized for your not only your business, your category, your business category. So you know, it's exactly right. So I use this to send commercials to the radio stations. You see, I have my address book here. I have permissions for each person in the address book. Of course, you can send it to anybody. Let's say I wanted to mail this ad. Now, I can do this in the email through Outlook, as I said, or I could do it through the page itself. They have an email interface for the file. But let me show you the give me a link thing, because I really like this. Now, these are the settings. Email me, you can on or off. Email me when the item's been downloaded. Require recipients to enter name and email before downloading. That helps with the tracking. You can say when the download expires. You can say they can get it for the next day, but not after that. I do it for a week because I'm sending them ads that aren't good after a week. I don't want them to get them when they're old. How many downloads? You could say unlimited, up to 10 per user. And then you say send files. And then you get this link. Now, the beauty of this link is they don't have to be a member or anything. This is a secure link, see HTTPS. Let me open a new browser window. I'll paste it in, and you'll see what they're going to see. They see a branded page. It is dead simple. I have to deal with people who are not exactly technically literate. So I have to make it a little bit easy for them. Simple. They press the button that says download. They get the file. This is ShareFile. Really great. I want you to try it. If you're in a business, and you'll see, by the way, when you sign up for ShareFile, they ask you what business. If there are a bunch of different businesses that ShareFile is customized for, including medicine, of course, biotech, construction, government, legal. If you're a lawyer, you really need something like that. You can't send legal documents via email. They're not private. Try it for 30 days. ShareFile.com. Our promo code for this is TechGuy, one word. Just click that, start your free trial, and enter the promo code TechGuy. And I think you'll be very... Actually, you know what? There's a better way to do this. Don't do the green button. Radio listeners, click here at the top. Do that one. That's the same for podcasts. And then it'll ask you, and you can put Tech Guy in and choose your industry. Really a fan. You got to try it. 30 days free, ShareFile.com. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones. That's probably the most commonly used computer in the world. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Joe, you are the most patient man in the world, and I apologize once again. We were talking to Joe last week. He started to tell his story, and the show ended, as it does, as it has. It always surprises me when the show's over. Invariably, at the end of the show, I go, what? And unfortunately, Joe was left hanging. You called back, and I'm so glad you did. And then I did it to you, almost did it to you again. We had to take a break for the top of the hour news. But you now have, Joe, 9 minutes and 30 seconds to tell your story. So to recap, your family gave you an antique camera. What kind of camera was it?
It's an old Kodak, what they call a Cine, C-I-N-E, Kodak.
Oh, Cine, yeah.
16-millimeter movie camera.
It's a movie camera, 16-millimeter.
They, you know, like I said, I collect old cameras, and, you know, I've got two sons, they're 25 and 28. They gift me with old cameras from time to time because, you know, I enjoy them. What got me collected was an old camera my grandmother gave me that when she was a young lady, a boyfriend, a guy that she was dating then, and she's been dead for 25 years now, but gave her this old Kodak camera, what they called a Pocket Junior.
Oh, yeah. I remember those.
As far as I'm concerned, the thing's huge. But
they had bigger pockets in the old days.
it folded up, but you know, extended out as a Bellos-type camera.
Right.
Anyway, I've got that sitting on the shelf here in my living room. But the boys gave me this camera this past year for Christmas, and on the bottom of the camera was written the name, Lieutenant F.C. Brevelier, 112th Infantry, 28th Division.
Wow.
And his service serial number. And a couple of days after Christmas, a friend of my son's was over here, and I was showing him the camera, and he got on his smartphone, started doing some searching, and found out the division was part of a National Guard unit out of Erie, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And actually discovered a soldier had been killed in action. And I was so hoping, you know, the soldier was still alive. You know, here I'm in East Tennessee, so how did a camera from Pennsylvania end up in East Tennessee? But anyway... The name being unusual, I got online, did some searching, actually tracked down three family names online. The first number I got phone numbers for him. First number I called, no answer. Second number I called, turns out he's the great nephew of this soldier.
Wow. Now, was there film in this camera?
No, there wasn't any film in the camera.
Okay.
He has film that was shot with this camera.
Wow.
And anyway, I, you know, told him who I was, why I was calling, and just, you know, said, are you related to this guy? He said, yeah, he was a relative. He was killed in World War II. And, you know, we were both kind of shocked, you know, here he's hearing about a family member from, you know, actually when I contacted him, it was August 7th was 68 years when the soldier was killed in action.
Wow.
And anyway,
Where was he killed, do you know?
He was killed in Gethimo, France. His division was part of the original D-Day invasion.
The Normandy invasion, yeah.
And
they battled their way through Europe towards Berlin. Yeah. Wow.
He was killed in Gethimo, France, and he was killed about 3 weeks before his division was the first division into Paris after the Germans fled.
Wow.
But he was killed about 3 weeks before that happened.
Amazing.
So, but anyway, I found out, you know, from talking to his relative, he actually sent me some copies of a couple of letters that Frederick had sent home to family members. And one of the letters was talking about going through training at Camp Livingston in Louisiana. And he was a lieutenant at the time. And he was talking about training the new soldiers coming into the camp on different weapons. So if something happened, another soldier could take over that weapon. And, you know, that almost like, you know, did he have a premonition of something going to happen? But anyway, and the second letter I got was his father had died while he was at camp, and a few months after his father died, his father died in August, almost 2 years before he did. But at Christmas of 1942, his mom was able to come visit him at Camp Livingston. She stayed on base in the nurses' barracks, and the day she left to go back home, his promotion to captain came through. She missed being there by about 2 or 3 hours from the letter.
Isn't that amazing? And, you know, the story it really is that you, without the Internet, you would have never been able to find this. I mean, you'd have to maybe you could go to Army records in Washington, D.C. and things like that. But the Internet makes this stuff.
You would never have found.
It's amazing. Now, did you give the camera to the great nephew? Or?
You know, you could have found his service records and stuff like that. But
not easy.
Found family history.
Yeah. Truly amazing.
The letter that I got from the nephew was. A letter from the War Department of him receiving the Purple Heart Award posthumously.
Wow.
And also got a copy of a postcard where he had arrived in England before the D-Day invasion, and that was probably the last letter home.
Where did your son find the camera? Was it at an antique shop?
Antique mall.
Yeah, wow.
And anyway, after finding the camera and finding out this history, also got copies from his nephew. I got a photograph of the Purple Heart. I got a copy of the certificate of the Purple Heart. And I also was able to, you know, I got in touch with Kodak because, you know, 16mm film is not made anymore or not made as much anymore. But I was able to find out, got in touch with an engineer that actually sent me a 400-foot roll of film.
Have you put it in the camera? Were you able to use it?
I haven't shot it yet.
Now, I would guess that the camera probably by now is not light tight.
Yes, it is.
It is. Well, that's amazing.
Hell, it is.
Joe, I have to run, but I'm thrilled that what a great story. I'm glad we could get that on. What an amazing piece of history you have with that Kodak Cine camera. See, sometimes collecting collecting stuff is cool. You never know what you're going to find. Jason, Rancho Cucamonga, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Oh, it's great. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. So my question for you is, I switched over from the iPhone. I jumped off the boat and I got the Jeep.
So you don't disagree with me that maybe it's time to look at an Android phone, huh?
No. You know what? I've been blown away. I was kind of surprised because a buddy of mine had been pushing me towards it, and I was a diehard iPhone.
As was I.
Watching Netflix on this big screen.
Yeah. Yeah, it does spoil you. Now, you know, once you get a big screen, it's kind of hard to go back to a smaller screen. Even the 4-inch iPhone, the new one, the iPhone 5, is not that big.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why they went with that design.
I don't either.
A widescreen iPhone.
What they're pushing, of course, is that, and they do it in the ads, and you see Jeff Daniel or hear Jeff Daniel talk, say, the hand is this wide, and look, your thumb can go all the way across it. But, you know, what I find is that ad is very misleading because that person must have gigantic hands because, yes, you know, on the new iPhone 5, your thumb can go across it. It's the same width as the old iPhone. But there's no way you can hold it at the bottom, as this guy is in the ad, and still reach the top. So I think they found a model with, you know, they've got Shaquille O'Neal doing this ad or something, because it's a little deceptive. Yeah, you can reach across it, but you can't reach all the way from top to bottom. Hey, hold on a second. I'll help you with your Galaxy S3 issue. I see you have a little issue with it. We'll see if we can figure it out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think Kyle Benham's dedicating that to the iPhone 5. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jason in Rancho Cucamonga has a Galaxy S3, but it's not behaving exactly how he wants it to. What's the problem, Jason?
That's my one gripe with the Android system. It seems to me like iOS does work a little smoother. Like, take, for instance, the navigation is what I'm having the problems with. I'll type in where I want to go, and it gives me the voice navigation. It'll say, turn left here, turn right there. But if you give me a buzz while, you know, she's talking and she's telling me to make a left or a right, she won't stop.
I know. This happens to me, too, because I listen to audiobooks, and the navigation talks over the audiobooks. On the iPhone, now I think it's application-specific, but on the iPhone, applications will pause or duck and then resume after the navigation. I don't know if that's – I'm not sure why that is. I don't know if that's applications or if it's the operating system. I suspect it is some failing in Android, but I don't know for sure. I'm not sure why that happens. But I agree, it's a little annoying.
Yeah, it seems like the applications get along better in the Mac, on the iPhone world.
Yeah, because they have to, because Apple will not allow you into the Apple Store unless you meet guidelines. Google is much more laissez-faire about applications in the Google Store, the Play Store.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. I think that the iPhone ecosystem is more polished, and applications perhaps interact better. On the other hand, I really miss Google Maps on the iPhone. And, you know, you could use the Apple Maps turn-by-turn navigation, but I'm not sure I would trust it. And there are, you know, street views missing. And so, so it has a nice polish because it mutes the other stuff, then talks to you, then it brings it back up. On the other hand, if it doesn't have good directions, well, so what if it has a lot of polish, right?
And I do like the freedom. I mean, since, you know, the third-party guys are a lot freer to do what they want on the Android. You can customize it a lot more. So
I feel like this is all really personal. This is subjective. This is not objective reality. There isn't a best phone. You know, you could say in 2007 when the iPhone came out, it was the best phone. It was for years. There was no question. You can't say that anymore. It's now more a matter of taste. I feel like the iPhone feels a little antiquated, frankly. It doesn't feel like it's kept up.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't let anybody snatch this out of my hand now. I love my Galaxy.
Yeah. There are things that, I have to say, Samsung, yes, they deserve to lose that lawsuit against Apple. They were clearly copying Apple in the earliest iterations of the Samsung Android phones. But at this point, they're innovating like crazy. They're doing stuff. You can do stuff now on these Galaxy phones that Apple hasn't, you know, dreamt of.
Hey, I do think there might be problems with that lawsuit, though, like captive Zoom. I think that they're going to have to stop doing that on Android now.
Well, we'll see. You know, in every case, Samsung says, no, we have ways around this.
Right.
So we shall see.
One other quick question for you, if you can take it. I'm a music producer, and sometimes I have to work with guys that are not in the state or whatever. I know you have GoToMeeting.com where you can sit down and you can, you know, have meetings with guys. But is there a software where, let's say, I'm using Logic Pro and you're using Logic Pro, where we can actually sit together and do a session and from different places?
There absolutely is. In fact, you know, remember the Frank Sinatra duets LP was not none of the people duetting with Sinatra were in the same studio. They were using ISDN lines, which are special high-quality digital lines. And there are many, many solutions now for remote production so that artists can be in different parts of the country or even the world. Now, it's tricky because you have to be synchronized. You wouldn't use Skype. You wouldn't use GoToMeeting because those applications aren't tuned to make sure that you're in synchronization, right?
Right.
Because that's a big problem. Even a half a second off the beat is going to sound terrible. You have to be right on. So these music production solutions are specifically designed for this. The chat room sending me to Ohm Studio. This is in beta right now. OHMstudio.com. And this is exactly, it's exactly what it is. It's a digital audio, it's a DAW, digital audio workstation, designed for real-time, internet-based collaboration.
Huh.
It's not Logic. But it looks a lot like Logic, and I would guess, it supports VSTs, so your plugins will work. This is brand new. I haven't tried it yet, but it sounds like a very interesting solution. There are I'm sure there are producers listening right now who have used other solutions, and I'd love it if you'd let me know in the chat room or pass that along on the air at 8888-ASK-LEO, because I'd be very interested here. I've seen other solutions. And I know, as I said, the Sinatra album, which was years ago, was it 15 years ago, was recorded exactly that way.
Okay, well, I'm going to definitely check out OCHA. Is the price tag on it crazy?
I bet it is, but let's see. Pre-order. You can download it right now. The beta ends October 24th. It ends in 3 days. $216 forever or $42 a month. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad
at
all.
That's half what Logic costs. So you use Logic, Jason?
I do. I'm a Logic man, diehard. Digital performer before that, but
that's awesome.
Logic
is definitely that's good. Awesome. Yeah, my son is 18 and in love with music. He's in his high school still. Uses Logic. He just loves it. What kind of music do you produce?
All kinds. I've done a bunch of stuff for Fox Sports Network pretty much whatever they send across the table. There might be two guys sitting at the table eating, and they want some jazz in the background. Whatever comes down the pipeline.
So you do music for commercials and production and so forth.
I did a song for Snoop Dogg too. I tell you, back in the days, I had a giant afro, so whenever I walked in, I would always they push the other guys out the way and be like, "Give me that."
You work with Snoop?
Yeah.
Oh, he's got a new name now. I can't call him that anymore.
Did he change it?
He changed it. I can't remember what he changed it to, but yeah, he changed it. But anyway, that's awesome. That's great. So you do beats as well as commercial music and things like that. Snoop Lion now. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, pretty much everything. Wow. Yeah, whatever comes across.
That's great, Jason. I should hook you up with my son. He Logic is an amazing program. You can just do so much with it.
Yeah, hook me up with them. I got like a terabyte worth of
Awesome. Do you have it? You have anything on SoundCloud?
You know what? I got one thing on there. I'll let you
email Leo at techguylabs.com. Send me your SoundCloud account. I'd love to hear it.
I will.
SoundCloud
I will.
Is great. If people don't know about it, it's a great way to share music free. Although if you're a pro, you can get a pro account that lets you put more up there. SoundCloud.com. Thank you, Jason. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Leo.
All right. Take care. You too. Very, very cool. Snoop Lion. Maybe Snoop Mountain Lion next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Hey, before we go much farther, let me talk about our phone system, if you don't mind. I know that sounds strange. We're sponsored today by Ring Central. They sponsor the podcast, and I am a big fan. You know, it's funny because before they were a sponsor, I was a customer. When we moved into the studio, we needed to get a phone system. I had never, I'm not a businessman. What do I know? And I hadn't really ever thought about that. We, in the cottage, we made people use their own phones, use a cell phone. But, they got 25 employees. I can't demand they use a cell phone. So we thought, well, what are we going to do? We're going to go to the phone company, get a PBX in the basement and all that? I don't want to do that. And that's when Russell Tammany, who is our IT guy, our contract IT guy, said Ring Central. He says, I've set up a number of people. A number of clients with Ring Central, and it's been very good. It's nice because there's no startup cost, so it's very affordable. It's as little as $20 a month per user. So when we add a user, we just, we add, get them a phone. There's no PBX. It's all virtual. It's all cloud-based. and you just plug in the phone into the wall. I mean, you know, basically I could give them the phone and say, here's your office, here's your phone, plug it in, and you're good to go. Great online software system for setting up the phone tree. So if you call our 800 number, you will get, you know, the system and all of that. Billing's online. They've got iPhone and Android apps. In fact, you can make calls from the apps that appear to be coming from the office. And you can have office calls forwarded to your iPhone or your Android phone. Or any phone, actually. Even your home phone. Complete call handling that way. All the messages, voicemail can be sent to your email. I mean, it's everything you'd want, right? Everything you'd want. Now, you can get a free trial right now if you go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. We've actually got a pretty good deal for you. We set this up. You get, for every phone you buy, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones, and a 30-day risk-free trial. So that's a pretty good deal. That's a deal no one else can get, only because you're listening to this podcast. So call 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980, or go to ringcentral.com and click the sign up button and do the 30-day free trial and use the offer code TWIT when you do that. Ringcentral.com. We're very happy with our RingCentral system. 800-543-9980. Join us in the chat room. And, in fact, John, we just talked to, is in the chat room right now. He's getting additional help and support. That's one of the best things about our chat room. You can get there through the website, techguylabs.com. All the show notes are on techguylabs.com, too. Our next call, Chris from Del Mar, California. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing, I don't know yet.
Well, let me see if I can make your day a little better.
Something I did on my computer got my email opened up to a bunch of spam. And I clicked on one that had might have had something to do with Office Depot or something, you know, but it turned out that it wasn't Office Depot.
I have had that happen. You know, I'm in bed and browsing, and my ex-wife, and it's not why she's my ex-wife, but my ex-wife looked over and said, "What are you looking at? Honey, that's spam. That's spam." Yeah. It's embarrassing. But they still sent it to you. There's nothing you could do about it, and it isn't your fault. You can explain that to your wife before she becomes your ex-wife.
It turned out to be porn, and I was trying to shut it out.
And you can't, can you? Because we call that a porn storm. This is called a porn storm, and they do this on purpose. You can't. Every time you close a page, another one opens.
Yeah, or three.
And it's the most, it's what people end up doing is unplugging their computer, which is not the right response.
See, that's what I had to do. I shut it off.
Yeah. If you shut it off normally, that's fine. You know, shut down. Really, it's your browser. If you can get your browser closed, it'll all go away because it's all coming up through Windows in your browser.
Okay. Now, I was told by a friend of mine that computers, every website you visit, they save hidden files or little pictures and icons.
You're worried that there's in your cache. So in order to speed up browsing, the browser saves images that you see so that the next time you go to that site, those images don't have to be downloaded from the internet again. It saves bandwidth and it saves time. It's called a cache. And your browser has it. In fact, usually has several hundred megabytes devoted to it. And your friend is absolutely right. You can browse that cache and see all those images. And you don't want that to happen. So what browser do you use, Chris?
I was using a Google Chrome Incognito, which isn't supposed to save anything.
You're right. So you're all right. None of that will have been saved.
Oh, so no matter what, I have a son that's pretty good at computers, and he's trying to get into forensic computer stuff.
Oh, just what you need. Hey, Dad, let me see if I can browse through your history. So let me show you. In Chrome, there is a clear, under the Chrome menu, there's a clear browsing data. If you clear that, that will clear the cache, that will clear the cookies, that will clear everything out. And your forensic son... Well, depends on how forensic your son is. He's not going to be able to see anything. If he's really, really good, even when you delete files from the computer, that data often is still there. And so it gets a little bit more tricky.
Now, if you were using the incognito, it shouldn't be there at all.
There
right?
shouldn't be anything there, yeah.
Because it's supposed to not save anything.
That's the whole point of incognito mode. That's right.
Listen, one more quick question for you. I have I bought Microsoft Office, paid the $100 for the you know, the Word and all that stuff. And when I get a PDF document in an email, it comes in this weird language, encrypted. I think it's encrypted.
It's probably that's not the case. If you get a PDF file and you double click it, and what you see is messed up, there's something wrong with the install. The PDF, the thing that's reading the PDF, either is interpreting the language incorrectly or the format incorrectly. So I would just reinstall what you've got, or get another PDF reader. There's very good ones out there. I don't recommend Adobe Reader. It's free, but it's not very good, and there's all sorts of issues with it. There are other better. Oh, I see. Shadow's saying, here's what's happening. You're trying to open the PDF with Microsoft Word instead of with a PDF reader. So,
okay, and with that whole suite that I got, that Microsoft Office.
They don't include a PDF reader. So you need to get one. There's a lot of good ones. There's Qt PDF. There's Nitro. There's Foxit. I actually like Foxit a lot. Foxit. Foxitsoftware.com. That's a nice one.
It keeps asking me for my upgrade, and every time I do the upgrade, it accepts it. But then every time I try to use part of that suite, it asks me for the upgrade again. So do I just call Microsoft?
I'd call them. They might have to give you a new serial number. Sounds like it's messed up. And in fact, Office 2013 will have a PDF reader. I don't know about Office 2010, which is the one you've got. But if you're having trouble with the install, it sounds like that could even be related to it. So you want to open PDFs with a PDF reader. For some reason, Windows up through 7 does not come with one. I believe Windows 8 does. So you have to download a third-party one. Foxit Reader is the one I use, and it's great. Actually, I bought the Foxit Office Suite. I just love it. It's a really great PDF suite. But you don't need that just to read PDFs. Just the Foxit Reader. It's free. Foxitsoftware.com. I prefer to read PDFs that way. Erwin in Pacific Palisades, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Erwin.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for having this great service. Let me get right to it. When I log in on my Internet Explorer, pops up and asks me for my email address. When I type in that email address, I type in my password, and I log in. It does not ask me to remember anymore. It doesn't remember my address or my password anymore, which it used to do, and it was really great because when I would then log in, my
you didn't have to enter it. Yeah, you're using this in the browser or using an email program? Pardon me?
No, what did you say?
You're using an Internet Explorer, you said.
Yes, Internet Explorer.
Yeah. So there is a setting in Internet Explorer, and it's possible that it's turned off, that says remember passwords. So make sure you go into the security settings of Internet Explorer. It's under Internet Options. And make it remember passwords. If it still doesn't remember passwords, there's something messed up. You know, the folder where it's saving those passwords has suddenly been marked read-only or something like that. And that does happen from time to time. That's a little more complicated to fix. But the first thing I would do is go to Internet Options and make sure that Remember Passwords is checked. You also might want to check the website where you're getting your mail. Make sure that they're allowing it. When you log in, you'll probably see a checkbox. Most email programs, web-based mail programs, you'll see a checkbox to remember your password or not. Make sure that's checked. Depends what email program you're using, but most of them will allow you to do that. It's a pain. Those are saved, by the way, in cookies. I mean, we were talking earlier about data that's saved by browsers. There's, of course, images are saved in the cache, but also there's something called cookies. Cookies are essentially preferences from each website you visit that are saved not on the website's hard drive, but on yours. So things like what the last page you visited was or what your password is, those are saved in cookies. And if you're and sometimes people are scared of cookies. Don't be scared. They're completely fine. And sometimes people delete cookies. When you do that, that will also delete your password. So if you're automatically deleting cookies, stop it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What's wrong and right. If you watch the podcast, you know, or the streaming video that we do at twit.tv, after just a program note, after the radio show ends, we're going to have a fashion show, a geek fashion show. Scott Jordan is going to stop by. He has a company called Scott E. Vest. It's actually a really cool company. They make clothes for geeks. In fact, pretty much all of my clothes are from Scott E. Vest. It's all I wear. And the reason is it has lots of pockets and little ways to run wires and stuff. So I wear my Scott E. Vest stuff because I can carry so much geek stuff, you know. It's going to RTC say, so you're saying it's a Scott E. Vest infomercial. It would be if he were paying for it. But he's not. It's just because it's so much fun to do a geek fashion show. You can't really call it an infomercial unless somebody's paying for it. If you give it away, it's just a plug, a free plug. How about that? Rob in Boston, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how you doing, Leo? Thanks very much for taking the call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. I'm an early adopter, and I've got an issue. I heard you say that the Samsung Galaxy S3 is the best phone out there.
In my opinion, it's an opinion. It's not an objective reality.
Mm-hmm. I tell you, I'm an early adopter. I had the first iPhone. I went to 3G, went to 4. And then in January this year, I got bored. And after seeing just about everyone with an iPhone out there, I decided to make a switch and went over to the Nokia Lumia 900.
Now, that's a beautiful phone. I think you made a very good choice there. That's a gorgeous phone.
Thanks. And I really do. I love the design that Microsoft has put out. It's a completely different OS. And do like the display and the fact that it's a bigger screen and whatnot. But now I'm stuck because I'm in this 2-year commitment. And the Nokia 920 is coming out,
yeah,
which has Windows Phone 8 on it.
Yeah.
And so it's more of a want than a need, but let's say I have a $600.
Yeah, this is how it begins, by the way. Just take it from me. I'm on the other side of this quandary. I just now just say, okay, I'm going to buy it. I buy every phone. I buy them unlocked. I pay the full price. I can justify it because it's my job, right? I'm reviewing these. But they're not making this easy. They're not making this easy. This is one reason I think Apple does not make big changes to its phones, because they know that people are signing up for 2 years. So Apple makes the big jump every other phone. You know, the iPhone 4 to 4S was a small jump. The iPhone 4S to iPhone 5 was a big jump. They'll do a 5S. It'll be a small jump. Then the iPhone 6, it'll be a big jump. And they do that because of people like you and me who say, well, wait a minute. I'm stuck with a 2-year contract. I can't upgrade. On the other hand, this Lumia 920, which is, you know, Microsoft has a quandary. They're behind. Windows Phone 7, which came out about a year ago, is great. Beautiful. But they don't have nearly the app ecosystem. They have quite a few apps, but not all, you know, but tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, like Android and iPhone do. They're behind. They just, you know, they're a few years behind. And so they're rushing to catch up. And so they didn't have the luxury of saying, well, we'll wait 2 years for the next Windows Phone. They're doing Windows Phone 8 now, and Nokia's following along. Nokia's new president, Stephen Elop, is a former Microsoftie, and they're very tightly tied. In fact, lots of rumors swirl. I don't think it's going to happen, but lots of rumors swirl that Microsoft will end up buying Nokia. I love the 900. It is a beautiful phone. The 920 is very much like the 900, slightly improved, better camera, and so forth. You want me to really make you sad, Rob? There's also the HTC 8X, which my Windows experts, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, they do the Windows Weekly podcast on my network, say
and they
thought it was even better. Yeah.
So don't rush to buy the Lumia 920. You might want to wait and see what the 8X looks like. Now, the first...
Can I throw you a curveball?
Yeah.
All right. I like the Surface. I'm excited about the Surface.
That's not a curveball. I ordered one. Mine's coming Friday.
But it doesn't have data for cellular data connection. That's what bothers me the most about it.
I know. You know, in one way, I don't think that's as big a problem because a lot of people have cellular data connections and hotspotting in their phones, so they'll use their phone as a hotspot and connect. That's what I'll do. And mm-hmm. I am sure that the Windows RT, Microsoft's may not have 3G, but there will be Windows RT tablets with 3G. I like that. I think the Surface is gorgeous. I'm very much looking forward to getting mine on Friday, and I'll have a review for you next week. And I would expect them to make a 3G version available. It's just that they have to, in order to do that, they have to make friends with the carriers.
Mm-hmm. Do you think for example, Microsoft Word on the RT tablet, the Surface,
mm-hmm.
Is kind of a streamlined version of
But
the
it does
Word.
Have a desktop. It's one of the few apps that has a desktop on the tablet.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a desktop version. I think that Windows RT Word will be very much like desktop Word.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check it out because I'm wondering if it has some of the full capabilities of Word with you know, the track changes and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't know, but you know, I'll tell you next weekend.
Yeah, I guess I'll be waiting to see.
It's a very, look, here's the good news. There's lots of choices. There's iPhone, there's Android, there's Windows Phone. That's good for consumers. It keeps prices low. It keeps innovation high. Puts pressure on Apple to update. It puts pressure on everybody else to keep up. And I think that's great. Microsoft's a little behind. Nokia's struggling. This is, I think, a make-or-break moment for Microsoft, both with Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, and Windows RT. These are three new operating systems. Microsoft's coming out with all of them at the end of the month. This is make or break time for Microsoft, and if you're rooting for Microsoft, you darn well better buy a Surface. They've sold them out, by the way. That's the good news. Now we don't know how many they made, but it's a 3 week wait now if you want to get one. I was lucky; I ordered one as soon as I could, and mine's coming on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, with the phone, one last thing with the Windows Phone, people ask me all the time whether. Whether the app ecosystem is there, whether certain apps are on there. I think Microsoft is catching up. I have to say that, you know, the transition for me wasn't too hard. I did check to make sure the apps that I used with the iPhone was there. And, you know, there's certain apps that aren't there, you know, like Instagram, for example, which is pretty frustrating. But
key is you got to look at what do I need? Is it there? And it's the same thing we said as Mac users in the good old days. When Windows users say, yeah, well, you got a Mac, but you don't have any apps, we'd say, well, yeah, but the apps we need are here. If the apps you want, Netflix, Evernote, Skype, if those are the apps you use, they're there. If it's Instagram, Path, yeah, okay, no. And those are apps I use. Occasionally, I'll be honest, there's iPhone apps that I can't get on the Microsoft's own Photosynth. Which is amazing app, is iPhone only.
All right. That's for you.
It's a great 360-degree photo app. There isn't a right answer on this one. If the apps you need are there, then Windows Phone 8 or 7 is a very, very good choice. It really is a good user interface. I like a little more flexibility. I like a little more programmability. I like what I can do with widgets on Android. So Android's my choice. This is the most personal of personal computers. So you do have to spend some time. I know a lot of our listeners say, well, just tell me what to get. And I can't. I can only talk about the pros and cons of each and say, you just got to try it because it's very personal. I agree. I think Windows Phone 8 is great. And I've had some and I was almost bought a Lumia 900 and I'm thankful I didn't because of course I'll want to get a 920. Good luck. Stay tuned. Let us know what you think, Rob.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, they're not selling really well. The 920 did not sell very well. And Nokia has informed, and Microsoft has informed everybody, there will not be an upgrade path for the new Lumia 900. You cannot get to Windows Phone 8 via an upgrade path. So, you know, I think there are a few people. It's not very many because not many people bought Windows Phone 7, but there are people who are very upset, you know. Happens in the Android world a lot, doesn't it? where you have a phone. The Galaxy S3 is still on Ice Cream Sandwich. They haven't updated it to the latest version of Android. And now Google's having an event a week from Monday, the 29th, in which they're going to announce Key Lime Pie, the next version of Android. And they're still, the flagship Android phone, the one that's most commonly owned, is still one behind. That'll be two behind. We're going to take a break. We got more. Stay tuned. Hey, if it is time to upgrade, you probably have an old device lying around that you want to trade in. Maybe that Lumia 900. Can I recommend the best way to pay for the next phone? I should have told this guy about Gazelle. This takes some of the sting out of the upgrade. GAZELLE.com. It really is the place to go when people want to get the next iPhone. They go to Gazelle and they sell the old one. How about this? Let's say you got an iPhone 4S and you want to buy an iPhone 5. I'm sure some of you are in that boat. How about $205? There you go. Throw that in the box. Now, here's the deal. Gazelle pays shipping on anything worth more than a buck. They will take broken, even non-functional iPhones. So don't hesitate to check the price. This quote is good for 30 days. So let's say you've got an iPad and you're saying, well, boy, I really want the next iPad, the iPad mini. But, well, there you go. Get the quote. Here's the deal. $350 for an iPad 2, 64 gig. $350. Now, here's the deal, though. Get that quote now. It's good for 30 days. You do not have to take advantage of it for 30 days. That means you have time to decide. You have time to see what the mini looks like. You have time to order it, get it, transfer your data over, and then send it to Gazelle, and they guarantee that $350. Now, that's sweet. GAZELLE.com. They'll send you cash. Well, a check, okay. Or PayPal. Or, and this is the pro tip, I recommend the Amazon gift card because they'll bump up the value 5%. Kind of rebate you their Amazon affiliate fee, I would guess. Gazelle sells it on eBay. And by the way, they've got a great store on eBay if you like buying other people's old phones. You know, you save money that way too. iPods, MacBooks. There's going to be a new MacBook. Maybe you want to get rid of the old MacBook in time to get the new one. Totally doable. GAZELLE.com. Get the quote now, though, because I can tell you one thing. None of these are gaining in value. It'll be 100 years before an iPad 2 is worth more than it is right now. Seriously. Get the 30-day quote while you can. Don't waste time. Gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about, cell phones, the internet, home theater, digital photography, whatever rocks your boat. If it has a chip in it, that's what I'll talk about right now. 8888 Ask Leo. We've been talking about, it's announcement week again. It seems like we just had a bunch of announcements. Apple has an announcement on Tuesday. We think it's a new iPad, but also new iMacs. Not great. Big redesign. I think just a slight improvement. New Mac Minis, same thing. The biggest change will be there. And again, these are all rumors. Apple doesn't tell. But I think these rumors are accurate. A MacBook Pro 13-inch with Retina. So they have a Retina display MacBook 15. And it's the best computer I've ever used. It's my go-to computer now. But if you don't want a 15-inch screen, they're going to do a Retina version in the 13-inch MacBook Pro. That'll be the biggest Mac announcement. On Tuesday, I believe, because nobody knows. We'll find out on Tuesday. But the iPad mini, that'll be the big story. And the question will be pricing. Rumor is $329 for the 7.85-inch Wi-Fi version. That's the starting price, and it's a little high, if you ask me. When you're competing in a world where, for instance, the Nexus 7 from Google is only $200 and a great choice, it makes it a little tough. To justify the extra $129. So that's Tuesday. Microsoft has a big party on Thursday for the release of Windows 8. And we'll start selling Windows 8 Surface tablets, Windows 8 computers, and so forth on Friday. So here comes the next version of Windows. Then on Monday, Microsoft is having the Windows Phone 8 event. We'll know then when they're going to make those phones available. We still don't know. We're still not sure. It won't be right away. It'll be a little later, I believe. And Google kind of, I don't know, is a, I kind of, this is a little bit of counter-programming, I guess. Google announced that they're going to have an event right before Microsoft's event on Monday, the 29th, in which we believe they'll announce the next version of Android. What is it? Let's see. They're all desserts, right? So there was a cupcake. It's A, B, C. It's alphabetic. I don't remember what A or B was. The first public version of Android was cupcake. And that was the G1. Remember that? The Nexus G1, or the first Google phone. Then D was, what was D? It was cupcake. D, I don't remember what D was. It was another dessert. E was eclair. F was froyo. G was gingerbread. H, what was H? That was the tablet-only version. Honeycomb. Then ice cream sandwich. The current version is jelly bean, J. And on the 29th, they're expected to announce K, which we believe will be key lime pie. Makes you hungry, doesn't it? They're also expected to announce, and this will be very interesting, some new tablets and a new phone, an LG Nexus phone. That'll be the new Google phone. Google always has one phone that's kind of a reference design with just a vanilla Google interface. That'll be the LG Nexus. A new 10-inch tablet with some nice new features. All of these running Key Lime Pie. So, good going, Google. Stealing Microsoft's thunder. Look, give them a break, will you? I tell you, it's great for consumers, though. You know, I know if you're a partisan of one company or another, you know, a Google fan or an Apple fan or a Microsoft fan, you might shake your fist and go, grr. But if you're a true consumer and you don't have a loyalty to any company, and believe me, you shouldn't, because they don't have any loyalty to you, then it's just great news that all these companies are making these announcements and competing. Because, yes, it makes a more confusing space, but it means that they're competing, keeps prices down, innovation high. It's a very good thing. So we and for a tech journalist like me, it's gravy, because it means more confusion, more calls, more people who need help. And I love that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Andrew in Granada Hills. Hey, Andrew, Leo Laporte here. You have 100 computers?
Well, actually, several more than 100.
Are you you're an IT guy, I would guess.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And they're all Windows machines?
Yes, they're all running XP Pro with Service Pack 3.
Yeah, and by the way, you're going to end of life is coming, and you're going to I don't know. Are you going to upgrade those to the next version of Windows? What are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. I got to talk to my management about that. It just means we have to go out and buy, we have to buy additional memory,
right,
and whatever else is necessary in order to get to,
right,
Windows 7 on all of these laptops.
I have to say XP is fine, and one of the best advantages of XP is it's been out there for a long time. It's been banged on by every hacker in the world, and Microsoft's have patched it. And that's why these updates are so important. It is probably the most secure version of Windows simply because it's been out there for so long and has been so vetted, and Microsoft has fixed every flaw. So you're probably okay for a while.
I tend to agree with you.
Yeah. No, in fact, my friend Steve Gibson, who does our Security Now program, a program you should be listening to if you're in IT, by the way. He really keeps you up to date on security and what's going on. He does not use anything but XP. He says, I don't trust newer versions. I want them to be banged on for a while before I upgrade. So he's very happy with XP. So here's the deal. You can download the patches individually instead of doing Windows Update on 100 and some machines. That's obviously inefficient because each of them is downloading their own version. You can download, and this is specifically for IT guys, if you go into the Windows Update, you go to the catalog. You'll see that in the settings on the left there of Windows Update. When you look at the catalog, every hotfix is available for standalone download. So, for instance, Service Pack 3 is a standalone download. What I would do is you've already got up to Service Pack 3, so just download any hotfixes after that. I don't think there'll be a Service Pack 4. I think we're done now on Service Packs.
The nice thing about a service pack, it rolls up everything previous. So if you're up to service pack 3, you've got everything prior to service pack 3. You just have to do, you know, the rest of the stuff.
Yes, I understand. But when I have as many computers as I have, I need to update all of them within, like, a week.
Here, the chat room is also suggesting you look at Auto Patcher. Auto Patcher. I'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. You'd like to talk high tech. I'd love to talk high tech with you. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's see. Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about. Andrew called in Granada Hills. He's an IT guy. He's got hundreds of Windows computers to update, and he doesn't want to go through all the hassle and or the waste of bandwidth going to each one and saying update, update, update. Chat room comes to the rescue. They recommended Auto Patcher, and I mentioned that before we broke, but this is the program I think you really want. It's the WSUS Offline Update, WSUSOffline.net. Open source, free software. And the idea is these computers can be offline. They don't even have to be online. You download the patches once, and you use this software to update all the computers quickly and without an internet connection. It works for our office as well. So this, and the chat room, of course, knows this stuff. They recommend this. And I mentioned security now. We also have an enterprise tech show, and I'm sure that Father Robert Ballister, our host, talks about this as well. That's called This Week in Enterprise Tech, or TWIET, T-W-I-E-T. And you can watch that show Mondays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Just on the internet, streams, it's free, twit.tv. Pismo also says WSUS has a service you can install on a Windows server that will just do it automatically over the LAN. Andrew, that sounds like the way to do it. WSUSOffline.net. Now, when I mention something like that, I put it in the show notes. Well, I don't. James DeRuvo does, and Josh Windisch. But all of the stuff I talk about, all the links and everything, we get those into the show notes as quickly as we can. We update that, and eventually there'll even be audio and video from the pick from the program itself on our website, so you can watch the show, listen to what I said again, look at the show notes, get the links, and you can even look at the comments. All of that is at techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Thanks for the call, Andrew. I hope that helps. Glenn in San Diego, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call, Leo.
My pleasure.
I have a Dell Studio D150. It was having some problems, so I reinstalled Windows 7. I updated, like, all the drivers from Intel and then whatever Dell had to offer. And occasionally, I will get the blue screen of death. And I was wondering what program you would recommend I use to, like, check the drivers, make sure everything is copacetic.
Yeah, blue screen of death, as I've mentioned before, is a pretty hard, you know, that's a hard crash. And a program can't do it. It has to be a driver or a hardware flaw causing that blue screen of death. I almost always suspect, frankly, hardware. And if you say you've got it, you know, installed and everything, you keep it up to date, I would worry about hardware. So let me point you to a couple of programs. There's one from a company called NIRSoft, NIRSoft, and that's NIRSoft.net. And he makes a ton. This guy is amazing. A ton of great freeware utilities, password recovery, network monitoring. I mean, I think this guy, Nir, must know more about Windows than anybody. And he has something called Blue Screen View. Now, you've seen in the when you see these blue screens of death, there's information in there. This thing will actually take, it dumps a text file, will take the text file, analyze it, display information, might give you some better idea about what's causing the crash. Now, I have to say that can be useful, but isn't always, because sometimes what Windows thinks caused the crash didn't. By the time the computer's caught up, you know, it's already moved on.
Right, because it doesn't say up that long. It will come up the blue screen, and then it say you need to turn off your computer right away because you'll get some damage, and then it just reboots itself.
Right, but it's writing to a text file, a dump file of this blue screen, so you can go back after you reboot, run this program, and learn more about what happened.
Right, because I noticed on television, you know, they have these advertisements, or sometimes they get these advertisements.
No, don't ever believe those.
Okay.
Speed up my PC. No. Yeah, and they show happy people. Oh, I went to speed up my PC. I clicked one button and everything works better. No.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I was just curious to see what happened. I did download it and I ran it, you know, not purchasing it or do anything. And it came up with like 1,800 different stuff. And I haven't even been on the web to see. I've been out there.
So that tells you essentially that what they're offering is bogus. Because anybody can go through what they're doing is they're pulling up the Windows log files and they're showing you errors. But that's normal. They happen all the time. In fact, if you ever get those calls, the fake calls that say, I'm from Windows and I'm here to fix your computer, they'll have you pull up the event viewer and you say, see all those red X's? You see you've got problems. No, that's normal. If you look at the logs that closely, there's always errors. Always.
Right.
So that's meaningless. And the fact that they pull that up tells me they're trying to pull the wool over your eyes.
Right. So that's why I said, let me call you to find out what program you would recommend.
Yeah.
I need to keep, you know,
Make sure you've got all the drivers up to date.
Right.
And you know, the Dell 16 is great, but it's, you know, how old is it now? 4 years old?
Yeah. I mean, I've had problems with I think that they have a flaw on this with the battery and with the way they have the power connected like on the side.
I have a Studio 16. I love it. But what I believe, you know, these are laptops. What I believe is the blue screen is much more likely a hardware issue than a software issue.
Right. Okay.
And the problem with that is if it is a hardware. Now, looking at this dump might tell you something, but most likely it won't. There's not much you can do except call Dell and bring it to a repair place. If, you know, laptops take a lot of abuse. The motherboards get torqued, you know, as you hold it. The connectors get messed up. And anything that can go wrong in there can cause this kind of blue screen of death. You know, if there's a loose connection on the motherboard because of the torque, those are the things that I would expect. Dell does have some diagnostic programs you can download. You might try those. It's my guess, though, that it's a hardware problem, not a software problem, especially since you tell me you're updating it regularly. You're making sure you got the latest drivers. Get the Dell tester. See if it tells you anything and maybe call them. It's probably out of warranty by now, I would guess. But those so-called clean my PC programs, forget it. Forget about it. You know, at best, they're a registry cleaner. There's no magic button you can push. I was watching one of those ads. I can't remember which one it was. And they show happy people running Windows. And I looked more closely and I realized those were Macintoshes. They were superimposing Windows screens on Mac laptops and desktops. That's how bogus the whole thing is. I do not recommend those. I really don't. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. PC Checker from Dell. That's the free program Dell offers. Thank you, Dano, in the chat room. Website is techguylabs.com. Our musical director, Kyle Benham, is responsible for whatever happens on this show musically. And he makes his playlist available after the fact on his Google Plus account, KYLE/BENHAM, or on our website, techguylabs.com. I was just handing out Google clusters. We have some visitors from Nashville, and I guess this is a Nashville treat from the Standard Candy Company. And somebody in the chat room thought I said Google clusters. You know, if Google were smart, they would buy a lot of these and brand them Google clusters. Oh, that was the Bruno Mars opening on Saturday Night Live last night. Aha. Thank you, Kyle, for explaining. Was that Bruno Mars doing his Michael Jackson? That's impressive. That's very impressive. All right, let's get back to the phones. 8888 Ask Leo. Jim is in Ventura, California. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Jim.
I'm a person who has long since cut the cable, as they say.
You're a cord cutter, we call you.
I am a cord cutter.
Yeah.
My problem now is I might be coming down with a case of cutter's remorse. The World Series.
Yeah, there's a baseball game going on in there.
Yeah, there's some real good ones going on. And I need to know if there's a way I can get the World Series to stream live over my computer.
There is. There is.
But let me add that I did watch the American League Championship Series over MLB TV because they have that postseason subscription package. But for some reason, it doesn't extend out into the World Series.
I know. And I paid. They got me. Because it was only, what, $5.99, right, for postseason? And I paid for it. And now they're saying you can't watch the NLCS, my Giants, or the World Series.
Oh, well, I got to watch my Tigers, but we'll do
it. Oh, you're a Tigers fan, huh? You must be very happy.
I am happy right now, but you can also understand my sense of coming desperation.
Yes, they're going to be in the World Series. Now, I don't know. Now, maybe somebody can explain this to me because this is appalling. And it's frankly bait and switch. So I believe, you know, this is, of course, where cord cutting hurts, is big events like the Super Bowl, the Academy Awards, the World Series, and local news, things like that. Then if you're lucky and you are in Ventura and you have an antenna, then that might be a good choice for you.
Yeah, my problem extends a little bit there. I'm in a semi-rural area out just outside of Ventura where it's pretty hilly.
So you don't get HD reception.
Around here has antenna service.
Yeah.
I checked out my zip code on that antenna.web website.
Right.
You can check the availability of over-the-air broadcasts or viability of them, and I got a negative there. There was nothing that would... was listed as reaching my area.
Yeah. This is unfortunate, and we're in this interim period where the cable companies are squeezing because they're deathly afraid. You know, I mean, if you're Comcast, I'm a Comcast customer, and I pay Comcast over $100 a month for internet and cable television, right?
Right.
I would love to cut about half of that off and just get high-speed internet from them and then get all my shows, HBO and Showtime and Major League Baseball and the NFL, over the internet. And it's, of course, Comcast says, but that's where we make all our money. And so notice HBO released an application. HBO Go lets you watch HBO on your tablet or your phone. But in order to use it, what do you have to be? A cable subscriber.
Yeah.
And you have to pay for HBO on cable. And now, that's not in HBO's interest, by the way. HBO would love to, in fact, in Sweden, where apparently they don't have the same kinds of deals with the cable companies, you can use HBO Go to watch HBO and just pay HBO instead of the cable company. And HBO would prefer that, right? Why should there be a middleman? Why don't we just charge you to watch The Sopranos and we'll make all the money and the cable companies bye-bye? It's the cable companies that don't want this to happen. There, and this is what we're seeing over and over again on the internet. What they call them incumbents. The people who are currently in power are fighting tooth and nail because their business models are being eroded by internet. And this is a classic case of the cable companies fighting. So they put in their contracts with Comcast, with HBO. They say, fine, but you can't go direct to the customer. You have to go through us. And if you should dare to go direct to the customer, we're going to cut you off. And at this point, HBO, Major League Baseball, and others can't afford to say bye-bye to the cable companies. I believe that time is coming. I believe that as sooner or later, this is going to happen. And this is what Comcast most fears. This is what Verizon and AT&T and Time Warner and all the companies that are carriers of premium products fear, is that you'll get these premium products directly from the creators over the internet and deal them out. So they're squeezing. And I'm shocked, frankly, because I could watch the World Series. I'm pretty sure I could watch the World Series last year on MLB at bat. And I can't this year.
I'm really puzzled. It would seem to me that if MLB, it would seem to me they're like a 400-pound gorilla in the room when they want to negotiate with the either the networks or the cable companies as to the
right
availability of their franchise.
You'd think so. And I think in time that these 300-pound gorillas will assert their dominance. That's why I don't believe this is going to last. But for now, they're scared. Remember the war that Dish fought with Comedy Central? They took Colbert and The Daily Show. Was it Dish? They took it off the Dish Network because they wanted Comedy Central, wanted Viacom, their owner, wanted more money. And the shooting war is Dish says, fine, you want more money? We're not going to give it to you. So bye-bye. And of course, what happens then is Dish tells its customers, well, it's Viacom's fault. It was DirecTV. DirecTV tells its customers it's Viacom's fault. Viacom says, well, no, it's not our fault. It's DirecTV. And the customer's caught in between, in the middle of this disgusting battle. So that's the fear, is, of course, Major League Baseball says, well, we're going to go on our own and sell direct. As soon as everybody they want to reach is capable of doing this, you better believe they'll say goodbye. They'd love to charge you $5 a game. So, I was shocked. I also have a team in the playoffs right now. The Giants, they're fighting for their lives against the Cardinals, and I would sure as heck like to have watched that game when I was at the airport in Denver, but I couldn't because I fired up MLB at bat and it said, sorry, it's only for the ALCS, not the NLCS or World Series. I don't know why that is.
It's incomprehensible to me, Leo.
Well, it's frustrating because I paid money. They didn't tell me when I paid the money that I wasn't going to be able to watch it. It must be Fox.
I've noticed that Fox is the broadcaster designated by MLB for the World Series and the NLCS.
Yeah. So there seems to be some. It's got to be Fox, right? They're the who else? So yeah. Fox has told MLB. Now, who has the upper hand, Fox or MLB? Well, maybe this year it's Fox, but it won't be for much longer, I can assure you that. Meanwhile, Jim, you and I were out of luck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Did you hear what they said? The rock and roll is dead. Yes.
So I don't, you know, I would love to get some help from our chat room. If there are ways to watch the World Series online, is MLB going to stream it online? Maybe they just don't do the, maybe they just don't do it on portable devices. Somebody in the chat room said that they thought they were going to stream it online. That would be fantastic. But you can see what we're doing. What's happening here is this conflict between the middlemen who are fighting hard to keep their business model alive and the content creators who say, why should we share it? We don't need distribution anymore. That's what's happened. That's what the internet's done. It has given everybody global distribution. For very, very low cost. So, if you can get the distribution over the internet, what do you need the cable companies for? What do you need the TV networks for? The content creators can go directly to their audience and collect more money and charge less. You see it already happening a little bit. Artists like Louis C.K., the comic, he decided, he said, I make more money up front if I do an HBO comedy special. But I want to try an experiment. Let me see if I can do a comedy special that's not on HBO, that I just sell direct. And I'm not going to put copy protection on it. I'm going to tell my audience, I trust you. What did he charge? Was it $5, $10? He made millions of dollars by going directly to the audience over the internet. And to me, that's a sign that that's what's next. It was $5. So much less expensive than going to a show. Probably less expensive than a pay-per-view would be. Now, of course, if you're paying for HBO, you get that for free, right? But I've talked to the cable companies, and they don't like this at all. I remember Cablevision telling me many years ago, one of the big cable companies in Manhattan, we can't make it as an internet provider. We can't. Our business model will not let us survive charging you for bits. We need to charge you for premium content. Well, they may need to reinvent their business model. A lot of businesses are. The music industry is. A lot of businesses are. The newspaper industry is. You saw this week, Newsweek magazine announced that December will be its last print edition. The Newsweek magazine, which has been around nearly 100 years as a printed magazine, is going online only. This is more and more. This is happening. This internet thing. This it's going places. There's something going on.
I do see, you know, I'm on MLB.com, and I do see that they have some content. I can't tell, and I'll have to take some time to go through it to see if they're going to stream the World Series. But that would be an interesting compromise. But, of course, you know, because the NLCS is on Fox and the World Series is on Fox, apparently Fox made some sort of deal. The question is, what kind of deal did they make? Did they prevent all internet streaming or just mobile streaming or what? I don't know. Let's go to Marina Del Rey. I bet it's a beautiful day in Marina Del Rey. Greg's on the line. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. Just the name, Marina Del Rey, sounds beautiful to me.
It's a beautiful day here at the beach.
See, I knew it.
I have three Apple computers, an iPad, an iPhone. If I were to switch to an Android phone, how will it sync and integrate with my Apple products and software like Calendar, Contacts, iTunes, iCloud, iPhoto, and also things like 1Password and Dropbox?
Right, right. So of course, Apple's interest is to lock you in. And that's why Apple's created this beautiful ecosystem with iCloud and iTunes and all the synchronization. And if you stay Apple and iOS, everything's just supposed to work. In fact, isn't that their kind of what they say? It just works. So
yeah.
That's their goal, by the way. And if you're going to move outside the ecosystem, you're going to face a few challenges. I don't think they're insurmountable. I use Macs and an iPad. I have an iPhone, but I also use Android phones all the time, Android tablets all the time. Here's how I solve it. First of all, and I think this is a good advice anyway, instead of using the Apple products, I use the Google products. So I do use Apple's address book and calendar on the desktop, but I sync, and both of them have this capability, with Google Calendar and Google Contacts. I don't know if you've started doing that, but if you haven't, if you have a Gmail account, it'll just sync to that account, and that's nice because it's also backing it up, right? I find Google's solutions better than iCloud, so that's going to get your contacts and calendars up to the cloud, right? Now when you get an Android phone, you just log into your Google account, and all of that's propagated right to the phone. What's even better is this continues real-time full circle. So you change something on your phone, it's changed on your Mac, and vice versa. I do that very successfully right now, no problems at all. So that's the first part of it. Dropbox works fine across all platforms. It's completely platform independent. Windows, Mac, Android, iOS, doesn't matter. What was your other one? Oh, 1Password. 1Password does have, I believe, has Android choices, but I use something instead called LastPass, and I prefer it. It's free or $1 a month for the premium version. It's completely platform agnostic, works on everything. And I find it actually a little bit superior. I use 1Password for a long time. 1Password's great. It just LastPass does it all for me.
Okay, great. So you don't think it's an issue?
I didn't say you wouldn't have challenges. You may run up against challenges. Apple, it's in their strong interest to keep you from doing this. I'll give you one more solution. For syncing your iTunes music, there's a free program called Double Twist that will sync your Android phone exactly the same way. In fact, does it over Wi-Fi exactly the same way you sync your iPhone, including iTunes playlists.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I find it works fine. I don't have a problem. But I've been doing this for a long time now. I always recommend the first time you add a new synchronization process, before you do that, you make a backup of your address book and calendar and everything, because it's clean, it's pristine. If you get a lot of duplicates, you can always go back. Always back up before you do this, right?
Right.
But I think you're going to be okay. I don't think Apple's got a very good handle on web services, to be honest with you. MobileMe was a disaster, and iCloud isn't, frankly, much better.
Really? So the best thing is Google?
Yeah, I use Google, and the good news is Apple supports Google.
Uh-huh.
So, for instance, when you get a new iPhone, you log into your Google account, and all your calendar, mail, and applications, and everything just syncs right over.
How does it log in to the Google account?
When your mail and contact settings on your iPhone, you can choose an account. You could choose Gmail, but you can also use Exchange. It acts as an Exchange server, and that's probably the better way to do it. When it asks you for the server name, it's m.google.com. Google has instructions on how to do this.
So it'll just be in your settings, it won't be something you have to do.
No, you do it once, it's in your settings, and that's done. And what you what you don't want to do is sync both to iCloud and Google, because then you will start getting duplicates. So you pick one over the other.
Great. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Greg. I do it. It's actually, it's kind of the holy grail for me. Hey, I'm out of time. Thank you for being here. I'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.